Good morning. It's Thursday, January the 25th of 2018, and you've tuned into The Morning Show here on 88.5 KRFY with Jim and Jack. I'm Jack, that's Jim, and we're
I'm here. Over here.
Hi,
Joe,
there.
Can you see me?
This is a lovely January 25th with no rain yet, although it was forecast for something before 8 a.m., a possibility.
But it's significant because this is the last Thursday in January of 2018. The year is nearly going to be 1/12th over.
It's been flying
what
by
a
so
downer,
far.
Huh?
Yeah. I do have a weather report. This is also, we have in studio, we'll be talking to Maddie Elliott and Ben Olson to talk about the upcoming performance of Death of a Small Town in the West. I guess we'd call it a revival, I think.
A return.
Of the local classic. But first, the weather. Also, this is our first morning show with new microphones set up. We can see everybody. Those of you listening don't know this, but we can actually see everybody in the studio. We can make eye contact. It's very cool.
Our listeners will have to trust us that we're not giving out fake news about our new microphones.
It's pretty neat. Listen, here's the weather. I got it.
I'm all ears.
Okay. Mostly cloudy, then slight chance of snow showers today. High of 36 degrees. And that chance of showers, 10% chance of snow showers after 4 p.m. Southwest winds 5 to 8 miles an hour. Snow showers are likely tonight before 10 p.m. And then again after 4 a.m. Cloudy with a low around 29. New accumulation of 1 to 2 inches is possible tonight. So, you know, get that shovel back out. Snow likely tomorrow, mainly before 7 a.m. So I guess that's still part of the tonight forecast. Cloudy with a high near 33 degrees tomorrow. Southwest wind 7 to 9 miles an hour. 60% chance of precipitation tomorrow. New snow accumulation of around an inch on Friday. Snow is likely on Friday night with a low around 27 degrees. Another inch or two on Friday night. And then snow is forecast for Saturday. The high is near 34 degrees and another 1 to 3 inches on Saturday. So it seems like it just keeps coming at a steady rate, according to the forecast. But we've been hearing so much about snow lately, and it just kind of turned into a drizzle.
It's that time of year, but I'm fascinated, Jack, by the language you use with the forecast. You say a chance of snow with 10%. When does a chance become a likelihood? At what percentage point? And then at what percentage point does the likelihood become a probability? I'm intrigued by your use of the language in terms of relationship to the weather, but that's neither here nor there.
Yes. Well, when I was in meteorology school, we learned that very precisely. It's 25%, then 75%, and then 100% is the cutoff for guaranteed snow showers.
Sure.
No, I really didn't. I'm not a meteorologist. This information comes to us from the National Weather Service. There's also a hazardous weather outlook in effect for our area, just so you know. Day one is today and tonight. Snow showers are expected this afternoon and tonight.
What's the hazard?
It's slippery conditions.
Bad roads.
Slippery conditions, especially over Lookout Pass. And then an active wintry weather pattern will continue through the weekend. Friday night and Saturday will bring a winter storm capable of producing widespread moderate snow on the higher mountains. Slick travel with snow-covered roads are increasingly likely by Saturday morning. So, there you have it. That's what's going on in the heavens.
The outdoors.
Yeah.
Let's talk about something that's going on indoors.
Yes, please. Let's do.
Let's do.
Here in studio, we are delighted to welcome back Maddie Elliott and Ben Olson. I think for the first time together.
Yes.
You've each been in here more than once, but glad to see you too.
Joint effort.
Yeah. Are you caffeinated this morning? Are you excited?
Mildly.
Yes.
I'm on tea right now instead of coffee. So it's not 100%, but
I see.
It's getting me through.
Is that for health reasons, Maddie?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I hope you feel well.
Oh, good. Yeah. No, it's fine. It's just coffee is not compatible with other things right now.
With directing a play, perchance.
It's extremely compatible with directing a play, unfortunately, so it's not the best timing to go off of it, but oh well.
Okay, we have both Ben Olson and Madeline Elliott here, and going to be talking about a play that's coming up the next 2 weekends. Let's get some of the facts out of the way. This is Death of a Small Town in the West. It'll be at the Panada Theater. There are going to be 4 performances this Friday and Saturday, January 26th and 27th, and the following weekend, February 2nd and February 3rd. The doors are going to open at 6:30, and the play will begin at 7 o'clock.
Correct.
Great. And that was the writer, Ben Olson. And let's talk with Ben about the play itself. And this is a revival would be, I don't know the exact word of that, Jack. This is because I think there's some new material. So it's new edition.
It's a redo or a revamp. I don't know what
like the revamp. Official,
yeah. Good. A revamp redo, you know.
Redois? I heard Redois once.
Basically, what it comes down to is I don't have time to write a new play. So I said, why don't we just put on the old one and zazz it up a little bit?
There you go. So the play was first performed back in?
It was 2010, actually.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Nearly a decade ago.
Yeah, I wrote it in 2009, and 2010 was the performance.
And what was the genesis of the play?
You know, it started as a novel, believe it or not. Back then, I was just a local dude who could spend all day writing if I wanted to, and I long for those days. I was writing it as a novel, and I got frustrated one night, and it wasn't going anywhere. And I just said, you know, this could make a really good play. And I'd never written a play. I've only been to a few plays. I'm not a theater guy. I've never had any experience in it or not. But for some reason, I thought this is going to be a play, and so. I just, and believe it or not, it was on a typewriter. I just sat there.
A what?
It was this old Underwood typewriter. And I just started feeding paper into it and started writing, you know, basically what came to be, you know, the 30 or 40 page truncated version of what this play would become. And it took 13 hours through the night. And I, you know, I had like emerged from my cabin that I was living in at the time and just took this big, deep breath. It was one of the greatest writing experiences of my life, actually. And and then somehow I got involved with Andrew Sorg, who directed it, and my other two plays. And, you know, the rest is history.
I never saw it. That was before my time. The first time it came out. No, I really didn't live here, but I've heard about it ever since.
What a pitiful excuse.
I know, but I've heard about it for years, and I'm glad that this redois is coming back. The title is Death of a Small Town in the West, which sounds. Would you say there's a pessimistic attitude to it?
You know, there's a little bit of pessimism, but there's also some optimism hidden behind that. And, you know, I wrote it at the time when, you know, Sandpoint had this giant, you know, swing, this economic growth, this huge influx of out-of-towners. And during the 2000s, all the way up until 2008. And then, of course, the economic downturn kind of put the kibosh on that for a few years. But the feelings amongst Sandpoint locals were that Sandpoint's kind of growing a little bit out of control. And that's kind of the direction or the muse that I was channeling when I was writing this was, you know, what if I took this, you know, this situation and just kind of pressed it against the wall and made it kind of absurd and ridiculous. And so I invented this, you know, this city council, and I invented this guy who comes in, and he's a smooth talking guy. And he basically kind of hypnotizes the council into thinking that his plan is the right plan. And, you know, the plan is essentially to bulldoze the entire town and make it into some kind of luxury resort strip mall. And a group of locals don't like that, as they tend to do. And they decide to form a plan to stop him. And, you know, I'm not going to give any more away.
Spoilers.
So how would you describe your updates, the new additions to the play?
Yeah, it was actually a really fun experience. I've never written with anybody. I've always just, done my own stuff. But, you know, being at the Reader, for 50 hours a week, that's my prison term every week. My creative output has just truncated to almost nothing. I can barely find the time to write my own stuff anymore. So I really have been wanting to do another play for a long time because it's such a fun experience. Chris Herron, who is the other half of Unknown Locals with Maddie, he has written, is it six plays now?
He's working on his seventh original one for this year. Yeah.
So, I mean, he's really prolific. I really like his writing style and his humor. And I just said, and I think he even offered it at one point, and I just said, why not? And I gave him the script and I said, here's what I'm lacking right now. I need a few more jokes. I need to get rid of these awkward scenes. I need to, it's really beneficial to see how it was produced the first time and see what got the big laughs and what kind of fell a little flat. So
was a video made of the first one that you could watch?
Yeah.
Ah. So that's a nice little help.
It was really nice. And I remember some of the bigger jokes that really, really took the audience every single night. And so we kept those. And I remember some of the places where I didn't quite nail it. And so Chris and I just met, and then I gave him the script, and he came back a week later, and he had just these amazing, great additions. So Chris gets a co-writing credit on this, and it's the first collaboration I've done. It's really fun.
He also has been involved in all of your plays. He's the only one, I think, that's been in all of them.
So. Yeah, Chris was there for the first Death of a Small Town. He was there for the second play, Sperm the Musical, and then the Hunt for the Pondere Paddler, the third one.
So were the Unknown Locals part of the original production?
No, Unknown Locals was only founded 4 or 5 years ago. And so it was after that time. I actually missed Death of a Small Town in the West the first time around, also by about a week. Kind of found out about it right after it had happened. And so that was disappointing. But
this isn't your first rodeo with directing plays, is it?
No, it's not. This is my third one in a row now.
Okay. And what is it like is this a different kind of play to direct, or what would be some of the newnesses?
This play definitely has a lot more absurdity and kind of content wise, it is different than some of the other materials and stuff that I've worked with before. But in a lot of ways, it's very similar. You kind of have the same responsibilities as far as, guiding people for performances and trying to bring out the humor and the timing of things. And then, the production side of it is very similar also.
Is Ben there when you are doing your run-throughs?
For some of them, he has been, occasionally, but it's not anything where, he's not been available when I've needed things and stuff like that. Like, he's always very accessible for things. As far as rehearsals go, a lot of it is just getting people together and running lines and practicing and kind of talking about how the stage is going to be set up and things like that. So it's as far as, the technical aspect of it, directing and producing, a lot of it is similar.
Yeah, okay. And I think Maddie has done a great job stepping up, because I told her, when we met in the beginning and I asked her if she was interested, I kind of told her the caveat, like, look, I am probably not going to be that involved in the planning and the preparation of this. I will be there to help with props and stuff like that as we get closer. But, I just said, as long as you're okay with that, I'm probably going to not be there for most of the rehearsals. And when I am there, I'm probably going to be in your way. And so she's been awesome. She's really taken charge of the cast really well. And everybody has a great rapport together. The actors look like they're always having fun. They keep laughing at the jokes, even though they've said them
So many times.
Yeah. So I don't know if they're laughing for my benefit when I'm in the room or what.
I think they're just still funny. Because I do the same thing, at rehearsals every week and stuff like that. Like, the jokes are still funny. They change it up. A lot of the actors, we have a really fun cast and a lot of them kind of improvise and kind of throw out different kind of jokes and ideas and change it up and stuff like that. So that keeps it fresh.
Fresh and new. I'd like to ask you, Maddie, how does it work when you have the writer present, not necessarily there during rehearsals, but we're available on call with your vision for what the play should be and how it unfolds, and possibly Ben's vision for the play. Do you turn to Ben for help, like, what did you mean by this line or something like that?
Yeah.
What's the dynamics there?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, I've done Ben's last two plays as well, so I kind of have an idea of, you know, the tone and the humor and stuff like that. But also that same, sort of thing of, you know, this line right here, what did you mean by that? Mm-hmm, and like this being also like a revision of a play, like there was one line in there that was left before. And I was like, talks about a person right here, but this person like isn't anywhere else and has no lines and has nothing to do. And he's like, yeah, that was just leftover. Just it's nothing kind of thing. So clarifying some of those things. And then also, you know, like if it's like, I think we should do this, you know, as far as staging or prop or something like that, do you think that that is okay? And kind of getting that feedback and stuff to make sure that I'm, you know, being true to what he's trying to kind of accomplish with it. And that's something that's really nice about having your writer handy, having worked on Chris's plays as well, being able to ask questions and stuff. Although Chris says as a writer, once it's written, you're kind of done with it. And then it becomes somebody else's vision and it becomes, you know, kind of this whole other thing, which it does change a lot sometimes from the page to the stage.
And that's something, you know, to Maddie's credit and the cast's credit, I agree with Chris. Like once you write it, I don't view it as something that's etched in stone. I actually prefer when people improv a little bit and add their own, you know, zest to it. That's one of the things I really enjoyed about watching the plays being performed before was it was different every single night. You know, a different joke would come out. They would try it for one night and it wouldn't work. So they'd try another one. They would just, you know, redo, lines. And I thought in the beginning, I thought, oh, this is kind of cool. I've never seen anything like that. And then I just realized how much I really enjoy that. It's not like this, you know, it must be said this way.
Every word is precious.
Yeah. Every word that I write is not precious. There's another adjective I could probably use. Not right. On the radio.
No, not on KRFY.
This is definitely not on KRFY.
This is Panhandle Community Radio. You're listening to The Morning Show with Jack and Jim, and we're here with Maddie Elliott, the director and producer of Death of a Small Town in the West, as well as the co-writer Ben Olson. We just mentioned Chris Herron, the other co-writer. He came up in conversation. We talked about some of the additions that he made, but did you update the subject matter at all? A lot's transpired here in town and elsewhere.
Yeah. Oddly
it's
enough.
Still so relevant though.
Yeah. Oddly enough, when I first, cause I've been asked by, you know, honestly, I've been asked by about a dozen people, you know, since the first Death of a Small Town in the West, hey, what are you planning on bringing that play back? And I always thought like, you know, that's stupid. I'm not going to bring a play back. I'll write a new one. And, but you know, one of the things when I finally like got it in my head, like this is a possibility, I could actually bring this play back. I read it again and I was really astounded by how many of the jokes and how many of the situations are completely timeless with Sandpoint. Some of the things were a little dated, but you know, and some of the things we had to add a little, like the two-way street transformation, that was ripe right there. I mean, I plucked that apple right from the tree and wrote
low
that in.
Fruit.
Yeah. And, but you know, some of the things have been updated, you know, but for the most part, I didn't really go too much into current popular culture. And I think that was a smart decision just because I think that the first play worked really well. It was of the three that I've done, it was the one that I enjoyed most, and it had the highest attendance. It had the most feedback, I think. And, so yeah, I think it just needed to be dusted off a little bit, like an old, you know, vinyl record and put on there, and it still works.
So some of the themes are do not change are universal, like the distrust of outsiders, the unwillingness of locals to investigate change. What would be some other themes that you were working with?
You know, just the general theme that that there's this sense among locals where they like how Sandpoint is. They think it's just fine. And all this, like, you know, all this pizzazz and all these people trying to, you know, change it and to make it something better and to say, you know, we need to do this and this and this. And then, you know, most locals will kind of just give you the side eye and say, like, or we could just do
leave
nothing.
Leave it alone. And just
leave it be. And because we lived here, we like living here because it's the way that it is. So that's the universal theme throughout the play, is the fact that, you know, it's the locals fighting against the out-of-town entities that want to kind of take this quaint thing that Sandpoint is and exploit it for purposes to, you know, to appeal to the rich. And so that's the highest theme, I think, in the entire play. But there's also just absurdity. And I think absurdity is a theme in itself. I really enjoy being able to write something satirical that has, you know, it has the potential to offend somebody if they take it seriously. And so I almost am trying to dare people to be offended, you know, because it's like, when you watch a movie or you watch a play or something else and it is absurd or, you know, dark comedy, I think it's important to let yourself just let all those preconceived notions just wash over you and get out of your system, and then just be experience the fun of this alternate reality that somebody's trying to spin for you. And so that's a huge theme for me. It's okay. Just absurdity in itself.
You're listening to The Morning Show, the Thursday edition, here on 88.5 KRFY. We're talking with Ben Olson. Were you the sole author for the first time around? And
yes.
Now you're co-writer with Chris Herron.
Yes.
Of Death of a Small Town in the West. And Maddie Elliott, who's the director of the play that will be on the Panada's stage on this Friday and Saturday this week and next weekend as all. We're going to take a music break now and then come back and talk about the cast. Who are some of the local folks that you have asked to join you in this rather interesting play? We're going to tune in. Usually we do the song that was number one 50 years ago, but it's the same one that was last week, Judy in Disguise. And so what we're going to do now is play the song that was number one 60 years ago today, and those folks who were lost in the 50s, you probably know this song. This is Danny and the Junior at the Hop, the number one song on January 25th, 1958.
Thanks for listening to the KRFY Morning Show. For copyright reasons, we can't reproduce protected music on the podcast edition of The Morning Show, but feel free to tune in live at 8 a.m. at 88.5 on your radio dial, or listen anywhere in the world by streaming us through our website, krfy.org. If you listen live, you can hear the full program, including musical breaks. While you're visiting krfy.org, consider tapping that donate button and help keep KRFY providing unique, quality radio in North Idaho. Thanks for your support. We now return to the show.
That was Danny and the Juniors at the Hop, the number one song 60 years ago today on this date, January 25th, the Philadelphia boy band. And if that song struck you as familiar and you weren't around in the 50s, it had a rebirth a couple of times in 1969 at Woodstock with Sha-na-na, and I think they're in the movie performing it. And then, of course, American Graffiti played it, I think, in 1973. So Danny and the Juniors at the Hop. And, of course, it's a staple in Lost in the 50s weekend here in Sandpoint in May.
It ends abruptly, I noticed.
We're sitting here chatting about other, you know, Sinclair Lewis's Main Street, and I didn't get a chance, another small town, a great short story by Mark Twain, The Man That Corrupted Hadleyburg.
Yeah, I've read that. Oh, beautiful.
I mean, that was flashing through my mind.
We're here with Maddie Elliott and Ben Olson. to talking about Death of a Small Town in the West, which has returned to the Panetta Theater. Let's talk about that venue a little bit. How'd you guys, I think the last few Unknown Locals plays were at the Heartwood Center.
Yeah, we do typically do our shows at the Heartwood. Ben had, he's done all of his plays at the Panetta, and so he had made arrangements for this one as well.
Yes.
Yeah, I love the Heartwood Center, but I also have this like soft spot in my heart for the Panetta.
Oh, of course.
I think it's a tough room to fill. That's the only downfall of the Panetta. It's just so big. But man, there's just nothing like seeing a play on the Panetta Theater's main stage. And that's the vibe I was trying to go for. And Patricia White at the Panetta, she's just been really great with us. She's given us the run of the place, and we really appreciate the help that the Panetta does for local theater. And you know, Patricia works her butt off, and so I just really appreciate having that theater in this town. It's my favorite venue in Sandpoint for music, theater, for whatever. And so yeah, so I'm a big supporter of the Panetta.
It's really been fun to be able to have the experience of working there again. I've been there for a few shows, but being able to, you know, I've learned the light board this time, and I've become a lot more familiar with, you know, all the little nooks and crannies and their secret passages and things like that. So it's really fun.
Fun. Yeah. I've been in that back room at the Panetta. There's some technical doodads that are kind of could be fun to play with, I imagine.
Super fancy.
Yeah. So the play is, let's do the dates one more time. January 26th, 27th, and February 2nd and 3rd at 7 p.m.
Correct.
Doors at 6. Where can we get tickets?
Doors at 6:30.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Tickets are at Eves Leaves and iCarts and the Sandpoint Reader Office, and then online at thepanetta.org. It is $10 in advance and $12 at the door. So if you get your tickets in advance, you save a couple of.
Yeah, we kept the cost low this time. I want to pack that place. So
yeah.
It's a $10 bill to come see this.
I had just one more question for Ben, which was, I mean, we talked about your 13-hour writing bender that you went on the first time you wrote it. Was there an inciting incident to bring it back? Was there one thing that that flipped the switch and said, you know, we're doing it again?
Oddly enough, it was almost like the straw that broke the camel's back. It was like the 12th time I'd heard from somebody about the play. And I just, you know, the same thing happened with the Sandpoint Reader, you know, because for 2.5 years it was out of publication. And I just remember like somebody saying, boy, you know, sure miss having the reader around and the calendar and this and that. And it was just like this light bulb in my head, like, oh my gosh, like I'll just bring the reader back. And so, I mean, maybe that's my lot in life, just to bring things back.
Revival.
But yeah, there wasn't one event that kicked me over the top. It was just, you know, the final person saying that would be a good idea. And that's what cemented it. And it was just forward ho from there. You know?
Let's talk a little bit about the cast. Are there any returning cast members?
We have two cast members that were in the original play. Ooh. We have Chris Herron and Ken Wood. Both were in the first one. They are the only ones, though, that returned.
Are they
for
playing
this
the
one.
Same character?
They are not.
Ooh,
so actually, nice. they've sort of. So Ken has moved up to one of the council people,
mm-hmm.
and then Chris was kind of an additional cast member. He played a couple of different roles in the first one, and now he is taking over what was Ken's role, which is kind of like the second in command for the crew that decides that they're going to fight back against the land developers that have come in.
What about the newbies?
Well, we do have like some familiar faces from other shows that we've done here in town, Kate McAllister and Eric Bond and Nicole Barato, Seneca Cummings, handful of others that we've seen before. And then we have some new faces with Tom Woodward and Steve Hammond and his wife, Wesley, and Carl Schrack. And I don't think Ricky's been in anything
for
quite a while.
Ricky Whitty.
So she'll be new to the stage. I went to high school with like half the people on the cast. So, and then we also have Corey Repass and who have I missed here?
Alex Cope,
Trav Dixon, and I think that's everybody.
Yeah,
I think I hit them all.
Trav, at the last minute, he just texted me. He's like, "Hey, if you need anybody else for the play, just, you know, pull a rope or something." I was like, "Actually, you want to play a role?"
I need another body.
Only in a small town can one do that. Maddie, I'd like to ask you, tomorrow the play goes on. Where are you now in rehearsals?
So tonight will be dress rehearsal. My job is essentially over. I don't get to tell anybody what to do anymore, really. I get one more night of notes. But tonight they have to do their full dress with all of the tech, all of the costumes, all of the makeup. There is some really exciting makeup things happening at the end of the play also. We have Devin Chamberlain helping us out with the makeup and things like that, which is really exciting. I'm excited to see how all of that
too.
Comes together.
I haven't seen the makeup yet. It involves a very interesting scene in the end of the play. So I'm very excited to see that tonight. And we also have Peter Lucht. He's playing the piano for us during the play. And Jody Rawson came out and painted the backdrops for us last night. And
Darian Kinney is returning as the stage manager.
Oh, yes.
Actually, she's stage managed all of your plays.
Except for the last one. She
That's
was
right.
pregnant
yeah.
For the
she,
last one.
She was in the audience for that one, taking it easy because she was like 2 weeks away from popping. But she did the first one and she's done a couple of others. And I'm really excited to be working with her as the stage manager and stuff, too. She does a great job.
I'd be sort of curious, Maddie. You said your work is at an end tonight. Does anything go on?
Kinda.
That's just what I was going to ask you, because you have multiple performances.
Right.
What goes on between the first performance and the last one, and when you have a week in between?
You know, we do the first weekend, and first opening night is always like really exciting. You know, everybody's like, we haven't done it before. It's the first time with an audience. And we really kind of get a sense of, you know, how things are going to play with people, the jokes and stuff like that. And like Ben said earlier that, you know, you try something and it doesn't work. And you try something new the next night. And, you know, the magic of live theater is that you can kind of play with those things and stuff. And then after the first weekend, there's a lot of like a learning curve almost that happens. And like by the end, people kind of have, you know, they're more comfortable with their characters and their lines and things like that. And they have, like I said, just kind of an idea of how the audience is responding to things and stuff. And then we have a pickup rehearsal midweek before we go up for our second
weekend. No,
that's
not a dress rehearsal.
No, a pickup rehearsal is basically where everybody gets together and we run through lines. And most of the time it is very loose and mm-hmm. casual, and there's a lot of improv and ad lib that goes on, and it's kind of just a chance to blow off steam and mm-hmm. kind of fool around mm-hmm. for one last time with everything before we do it again for audiences that weekend. So pickup rehearsals are always really fun, especially when you have a play that lends itself to the improvisational aspect like Ben's do.
So this won't be the exact same play all four nights, you don't think?
It never is.
Right.
No, I mean, live theater changes every night. It's really interesting because the audience makes such a difference. You know, I mean, like there's always like you switch a line around or you deliver a joke differently or something like that. Those things always happen with live theater. But the thing that I have noticed over the last few years of producing plays and being involved in theater and stuff is the way that the audience responds to things makes such a difference for the energy of the actors and the tone of the play. And like if the audience is there and they're in it, then the cast is just on it. And then, you know, sometimes there have been times when the audience is less than enthusiastic, and that really can zap the energy out of the cast and stuff. And so the audience always plays a really important role in live theater in that sense.
I agree. I think that's not just for stage plays. I think that's for, you know, live musical performances or anything. It's the audience is such an integral part of a performance. And a lot of times you go to a bar and you just kind of sit and talk loudly and there's a band playing right in front of you. And, you know, it's not like it's rude or anything, but the band knows what you're doing. The band knows that you're sitting right in front of you and talking on your cell phone or whatever. And they pick up on that energy. And the same thing with a play. You know, if the audience comes and they've You know, we suggest having one to two beers before the play and then keep that regimen up throughout.
We're always funnier after you've had a few drinks.
But like, yeah, if the audience is a little bit rowdy and ready to laugh and have a good time, the cast, like Maddie said, they just pick up on that like gangbusters. Yeah. And it's a huge part of the performance.
That's one of the interesting aspects of live performance. You think of like you buy a book of poetry your response does not impact that poem at all.
Yeah.
Or if you go to a museum and you see a work of art and you look at it, and let's say if you just blow it off, that's not going to ruin that work of art. But with a stage play, you know, if you have a line that you think is just going to knock them out of their seats and it doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
Oh, whoa. That's sort of interesting, you know, that the audience becomes a very active participant in the overall effect of the evening. That's fascinating.
They're almost a member of the cast in themselves. Yeah.
There you go.
I might even want to list them on the program. audience.
Right, right.
Speaking of audience, you did mention in the Reader article, caveat to the age group.
Yes. I think this has been the norm with every single play I've written. I have had a family walk out of every single one of my plays that I've ever done. And I take that as a badge of honor, but a lot of people would be scared about that. I think that mostly, it's not like X-rated or anything. You don't have to worry about that, but there is some language. You know, people in Sandpoint have a colorful language, and I channeled that while writing this and every other play that I write. I don't get to swear that much in the newspaper, so this is my chance to...
Or on the air,
you know?
There's adult language and there's adult themes, I would say. Like, some of the content is, you know, not geared for children. Actually, it's funny because several of the cast members have children, and so it's like we squirrel them away in the back room and stuff like that. It's like, don't listen... Don't watch. This is not appropriate for children. And my son is like, why? And I'm like, you'll understand later. We'll talk about it another time.
Yeah. But I have had people bring their teenage children and they have no problem. But I always give everybody a caveat. Like, if they're sensitive to language, or if you don't have a sense of humor, you know, you're probably not going to have a good time with this play, because it does push a button or two that is meant for laughter, not anger.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not interested in offending anybody. The politics play a very, very, very minuscule role in this play. And that's by design. Like, I'm tired of the political division in the world and everything else. So this play actually is just, it's almost apolitical in its intent, which is to make you laugh and make you think about the direction that Sandpoint could go someday if managed by, you know, the wrong person. And so I think that's an important part to just always remember, is that when you come to this play or any other plays that I do, just come ready to laugh and have fun. And
with an open
mind.
Don't
take them seriously.
Yeah, don't take anything that I write seriously.
Okay.
Please.
We've been here with Ben Olson and Maddie Elliott, co-writer and director of the upcoming Death of a Small Town in the West that opens tomorrow night at the Panada Theater, Friday, January 26th, performed again on Saturday, January 27th, and then next month, February 2nd, Friday, and February 3rd, a Saturday. Doors open at 6:30, and the play begins at 7. And once more, Maddie, where are the tickets available at?
Tickets are available in advance at Eve's Leaves, iCarts, the Sandpoint Reader Office, and Panada.org.
Okay.
And I just wanted to add real quick, whatever profits or proceeds we make, I always try to distribute it among the crew, the cast, and... Unknown Locals and Sandpoint Reader are also going to benefit from this play. So if no other reason, if you like those two entities, you know, come and support them.
And also to come out and support the live arts here in North Idaho, whether it be performances on the stage or musicians or wherever. The arts are vibrant and alive here.
Absolutely.
And I think it's important that we show support in any which way we can.
What if it sells out four nights? Is there a sequel?
That's never happened.
Cartwheels, and I haven't done a cartwheel since high school. So
No, I think the first run, I think one night we had almost 230 or 240 people in the audience, and that felt like a huge room. I mean, when you fill the bottom with 250 people.
Oh my
people,
gosh, that's like four times as many people usually come to my place.
I just volunteered last weekend at the Panda for the three nights of the Banff Film Festival, and it was full.
Yeah.
Every night. And I was, as you were talking, Ben and Maddie, I was thinking to myself, what must it be for the performers if they peek through the curtains and see a full house? Think of the think of the energy. Think of the you talk about the audience being part of the cast. Mm-hmm. Boy, that must be like a shot of adrenaline.
Oh yes, absolutely. And that adrenaline can go one of two ways. It goes into like excitement, and you get really pumped up, and you're super psyched, or you like you have to go and like throw up in the back or something like that. It's like, too many. Mm-hmm.
Let's hope you guys break legs and fill the house.
Thank you so much.
I will break every leg in that house.
Thank you so much. We're going to do a musical break, and then while we say goodbye to Ben and Maddie, this is a song that was released on this date on January 25th, 1969. We're going to play it, and then I'll talk a little bit about it. I bet you all know it.
The KRFY Morning Show is available as a free download at krfy.org. You can also stream Panhandle Community Radio live from the website and find program schedules and more information about the station. While browsing krfy.org, support the station by clicking the Donate button on the right side of your screen and help keep Panhandle Community Radio commercial-free and a growing community resource.
That was Creedence Clearwater Revival, of course, with Proud Mary. That was a song on their second album called Bayou Country, and that was released on this date in 1969. And it hit the number two on the Billboard Hot 100 charts in March of 69, and it's the first of five non-consecutive singles from Creedence Clearwater Revival to peak at number two.
They're Louisiana boys, aren't they? Clearwater.
That's, you know, I thought that for the longest time, but then you discover they're from the San Francisco Bay Area. You know, here they are singing about the bayou and the Mississippi River, and you think they're waist deep in the Big Muddy, and
That song famously covered by Ike and Tina.
Exactly. And the other interesting thing about the group is that I've seen Woodstock, the movie, and I was not aware that they performed at Woodstock.
I think I knew that.
I did not know that. I mean, it's sort of like try to find the footage of the Grateful Dead at Woodstock. The Grateful Dead said that was one of their worst performances ever.
Really?
Yeah. But anyway, CCR, and of course they gave us just tons of hits.
Yeah.
And then when they fell apart in 72, there was acrimony and fighting. And then John Fogerty, for the number of years, the next couple of decades, did not perform any of the CCR songs.
Right.
He went solo.
I heard a story. Yeah, we got a minute. It could be apocryphal, but the story I heard was that he was on tour and actually was playing with Bob Dylan one night. And Dylan wanted to hear some Creedence songs, and John Fogerty said, I don't do that. And Dylan said, you want people to think that Tina Turner wrote Proud Mary? and that was and after that he performed it.
Let me tell you, that Tina Turner, Ike and Tina Turner, where she starts out slow.
Yeah.
And then all I remember is she had the sequin dress, the clip I've seen, a sequin dress on, and then they start kicking it into gear, and those sequences just jangled all over the place. Just beautiful. But what a great, great band, CCR. And certainly we do play on 88.5 KRFY a number of the good songs. So we're going to head into the events for this weekend. And I'll start off with on Saturday. No, I take it back. On the 26th, that is tomorrow night, at the Heartwood Center, Living Voices Klondike, The Last Adventure. This live storytelling performance is based on real events and tells the tale of Eliza, a young woman who braves the perilous journey to the Yukon in search of golden opportunity. Her resilience and motivations are repeatedly tested in The Last Great Adventure of 1897. The performance begins at 7 p.m. at the Hartwood Center and includes historical photos and a video presentation. This is brought to you by POAC, the Pondere Arts Council Performance Series. You can get tickets at the door starting at 6:30 p.m. This is the live Living Voices Klondike, Last Adventures for the whole family.
Right. And good note there for the whole family. If you are in the mood for live theater, but you got little kids or something you can't take to go see Death of a Small Town, go see Klondike. I think that sounds like a fine idea, although ticket sales, last time we spoke to Hannah from POAC, ticket sales were brisk, so you might want to get hold of those if you can. Otherwise, coming up tonight, Five Alarm Funk is going on at the Hive. Doors open at 7 p.m. and the show gets started at 8 p.m. Funky fresh into 2018, and so hot they had to give it five alarms. This Vancouver-based band is eight men strong and over a decade deep into a career that has seen five acclaimed albums and is burning up stages across the country on six national tours. It's Five Alarm Funk. That's at The Hive on Thursday night. That's tonight.
Tonight.
21 and older. Going on Friday.
Well, I do want to say one thing about The Hive. You know, that it's a great venue, The Hive is. And if you haven't been there, check out one of their performances. They're not as regular as we would like them to be, but boy, when they bring somebody to town, the place just is hopping.
It's a cool, it's a very cool venue.
It's such a treat for this town to have a place like The Hive.
Yeah. We got more live music coming up this weekend as well. Here's the whole rundown. Five of them on that Cedar Street and First Avenue
corner.
Yeah. At the Winery, starting at the west end of Cedar Street and then moving our way east. We got at the Winery, the Pondere Winery, that is, from 5 to 8 p.m. One Street Over is the name of the band. A couple of groovy guys from, I don't remember where they're from, but anyway, One Street Over, that's the name of the band, not the name of the location. Go to plwine.com for more information about that. There's live music at the Poor Authority with Mike and Shanna Thompson from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. There is live music, Friday night dining music out in Pondere at the Farmhouse and Silo Bar. That's up on Highway 95 from 5:30 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. Tom DeRozzi on vocals and guitar. 610-1027 is the phone number of the Farmhouse and Silo Bar. There's music at the Wine Bar on Cedar Street Bridge, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. with Mostly Harmless. Then at the Beer Hall, McDuff's Beer Hall, that is the Dodgy Mountain Men up from Missoula, Montana from 6:30 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Friday night. A home-brewed Montana stompgrass that goes down smooth but packs a bite, according to their press, making the rhythms of bluegrass the soul of the blues and the energy of rock and roll, with a plethora of other musical traditions to create a unique electro-acoustic experience. The Edelwagon will be there as well. This is a 21 and older show because it is at the Beer Hall, but it is non-smoking. We already mentioned Klondike, The Last Adventure at the Hartwood Center. Go to artinsandpoint.org for more information about that. And then Death of a Small Town in the West. Finally, on Friday night at the 219, Spokane-based Donna Donna and Cattywomp from 9 p.m. till midnight. Donna Donna is a high-energy duo. Will rock your world with classic blues rock, plus some extra special fun times, influenced by Jefferson Airplane, Jack White, and Janis Joplin. Cattywomp is a six-piece band incorporating different genres and styles within each of their compositions. 21 and older, because it is the 219 bar. It's non-smoking now, though. Yeah, so there you go.
One more thing about Death of a Small Town in the West. It is this Friday and Saturday at the Panada. Doors open at 6:30. Play begins at 7. And then next weekend, February 2nd and February 3rd, a Friday and a Saturday at the Panada. So you have four opportunities to catch this locally written play and locally acted.
Here's a here's an event coming up on Saturday, which I cannot believe is the fourth annual. I've not actually been to any of the previous ones, but maybe this is the year. It's Fatty Flurry Fest, the fourth annual celebration of fat bikes in the North Idaho. If you've never tried a fat bike before and want to try before you buy, here's your chance for free. And if you already have one, come hang out with some fellow fat bikers and ride some cool trails at Round Lake State Park.
And also on Saturday, the 27th, Robert Burns Night, a traditional Scottish celebration at the Heartwood Center at 615 Oak Street. It hosts a traditional Scottish celebration of the birthday of Robert Burns, who probably most folks maybe do not know, but he wrote Auld Lang Syne, Should Old Acquaintance Be Forgot, from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m., and the evening will include dinner, dancing, and entertainment. There will be piping, Highland dancing, a poetry reading, haggis, and all sorts of other great things that make up a Scottish celebration. That seating is limited. If you want more information, you email BJR*STARR. So that's BJR*STARR@gmail.com for ticket information. It's sponsored by the Albany Fall Pipes and Drums of North Idaho.
I didn't even know we had like a pipes and drums outfit.
Oh yeah, here, but, yeah. I've seen them at the 4th of July.
Now that you mention it, that's where I've seen them.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yes, okay. They're wonderful.
Yeah. There is live music going on Saturday night at the Idaho Poor Authority from 5 p.m. with the Somethings, who are splendid, the local duo, the Somethings. Wine bar music at the Cedar Street Bridge Wine Bar with Oak Street Connection. That's, again, at the Wine Bar, not on Oak Street. Beer Hall music at McDuff's Beer Hall. Proud to welcome back The Other White Meat, performing from 6:30 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. Classic rock band from North Idaho. Has been around since the early 90s, opening for such acts as George Thorogood, Styx, and REO Speedwagon. This is at the Beer Hall, McDuff's Beer Hall. There's ballroom dancing at Sandpoint Community Hall from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. on Saturday night. Evening begins with a nightclub two-step lesson. As always, there are refreshment store prizes, mixers, etc. Couples, singles, and all levels of dancers welcome. It is a good chance to learn how to ballroom dance. Finally, live music at the 219 with Right Front Burner. That's RFB from 9 p.m. till midnight on Saturday the 27th. This is Sandpoint's funk, disco, rock, and groove band, arguably the funkiest trio you'll see in the England Northwest, whose years of musical experience shine through with every glistening note. Right Front Burner is here to help you get your groove on. It's 21 and older because it's at the 219, and that's what's coming up this weekend.
As always, it's a busy weekend here in Sandpoint. There's always a plethora of things to do.
I am excited to see that play. Thanks again to Ben and Maddie for coming in to talk
about
Death of a Small Town in the West. When are you going to go, Jim? You're going to try and sneak in?
I'm thinking of tomorrow night, but then always it's the first night and you go, maybe I should wait till the second weekend when I'm open Saturday night. I cannot go, but maybe the second or the third, but I am going to catch it one of the nights.
Yes.
I like to support as much as possible that I, local talent, local artists, whether musicians, playwrights, plays, that sort of thing. So you bet. How about yourself?
I don't know. I'll have to talk to Annie about it, figure out what day works for us. But I am firmly committed to going to one of these four nights, especially because it's at the Panada, which is so cool.
The Panada is always, as I mentioned earlier, I had volunteered for the Panda for the BAM Film Festival. And what a wonderful venue. And how wonderful it is to see it jam-packed with people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they do such a good job there with the volunteers and programming. And the Panda is a real treasure. You know, I see the Panda much like the library in terms of indicating the health of the community. The library being vibrant and alive, and the local entertainment venue of the Panda being busy, which
right.
is a good thing.
Yeah, at opposite ends of, almost at opposite ends of Cedar Street, but yeah. not quite. Yeah. Hey, we're out of time. Thanks for tuning into the morning show here on 88.5 KRFY. Stay tuned for Bird Note and then Otto's Eclectic Mix all day long after that. For Jim Healy, this is Jack Peterson saying, buenos dias.